meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcoat Podcast. First of all, I want to start out by thanking our listeners for hanging out with us today, because I don't know otherwise, I don't know why I would be doing this without you people. So thank you. I'm Dave Etler. With me today are Mark Mubarak.
Hey, Dave.
We've got Corbin Weaver.
Hello.
We've got Alex Volkmar.
Hey, Dave.
And we've got first-timer Aaron Renfrew.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
Nice.
What brings you here today?
Just wanted to try this out. I'm going to be doing an interview later this semester with a hero of mine, so some practice.
And who would that be?
That would be Sister Helen Prejean. She's an anti-death penalty advocate that will be here at Iowa.
Yeah, we'll be doing a podcast with her. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, should be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, what's been going on this week?
Well, you know, Hy-Vee, our local grocery store,
where there's a helpful smile in every aisle.
There is a helpful smile in every aisle.
By the way, Hy-Vee, if you want to get in touch about a sponsorship, I'm here for you.
They do a lot of community things, actually, which is pretty good. They have a dietitian there, and apparently there's a house chef. Anyway, but I went to this event at Hy-Vee last night called The Spirit of Women, and it was it's dinner with a doc. So they made dinner at Hy-Vee, and a doctor came and spoke about pelvic floor disorders.
The spirit of women.
The spirit of women.
Rooms?
There is a club room in the back of Hy-Vee. by the dairy section.
By the dairy, yes.
They actually have like a test kitchen there, kind of. It's like you can. There's like a mirror where you can watch a chef prepare the food. It's really interesting. Anyway, learned about pelvic floor disorders, which are
the spirit of women.
Is at the pelvic floor. Yeah. Well, you know, and it was, I mean, when you think about your target audience for this type of community event, it's, I think, the older retired generation, and this is an issue among older women, pelvic floor disorders, so like urinary incontinence and stuff. But I was shocked listening in as like someone halfway between a layperson and like a professional, you know, like I wouldn't quite call myself a professional yet, but
yeah,
like
you're working on it.
Working on it. How associated people have between their like urinary system and their GI system.
Well, they're pretty close together.
Yeah, but they're not like there's nothing going like no like not at all.
They don't meet.
Yeah, and so we you know, during the lovely question and answer portion, the whole presentation was about, you know, like urinary incontinence, you know, stuff like that. And then, so you know, some lady's like, I just have terrible gas. Like, what can I do for that? Just like, lady, we're talking about a different system here. But
that's all the same.
I have acne.
What can I do about that?
What can I do?
Well, I mean, it's good that people feel comfortable asking those questions in a big group like that. Well, that's pretty awesome. I was like, you get it, lady.
I usually avoid intentionally bringing up my gas in public. I mean, usually it's an accident.
Yeah.
But did you learn anything? So you went because you just wanted to.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to see how, like, because it's put on by U of I Women's Health. I want to be an OBGYN. And I kind of wanted to see how they're doing, like, outreach to the community. Mm. I mean, I think it is good outreach because, for instance, especially with this issue, a lot of women won't bring it up to their doctor. But it's they could get relief, you know, symptom relief if they would, you know, they're just too embarrassed to bring it up. So, like, I mean, it's a good, I think, service to the community for women's health to go out there and be like, hey, this is actually a normal thing. It happens to a lot of people. Let's talk about it. And I think it's a good way to get people to come into their doctor. And there was one, I don't even know if I can, it wasn't like, but who brought up like very specific like details of her like stool. I'm just like, but
this
yeah.
Is what, this is what we talked about.
Medicine. This is like the bread and butter, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is what we talked about on the last show with Tony's idea about plastinated poop to help. Mm-hmm.
Stool is always relevant.
It's always relevant.
Always, it's always important.
Bring it up
to help people describe their poop. Plastinated poop. It's an idea.
Well, and it occurred to me how like how much I've kind of changed since getting to med school, and the fact that, like, you know, asking someone about their poop is, like, not a big deal for me. I do it every time I meet a new patient. Like, I'm like, hey, so, but...
I was doing what I usually do, surfing around the internet. It's pretty much all that I do outside of work. You know, occasionally I leave
inside of work.
No.
Never.
It's a lateral thing.
Those anyway, work. Yes. Never before four. And I came across a bunch of old-timey remedies. And, you know, alternative medicine is a thing, right? Why not? And I know that, you know, for instance, in episode, what was it? Episode 90, we talked about a 1,000-year-old salve that nukes MRSA made of wine and garlic and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I read an article about that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Okay. It like
I think there was like an NPR thing about it.
It like it like kicks some major MRSA ass. So, you know, in the name of science, I thought today we should give some old-timey recipes a try.
What's our ailment in this case?
Yeah, what's our chief complaint here?
Life.
I'm not complaining about that.
Well, you know, you're going to have to do some imagining here. So I tried to pick ones that might be relevant to med students. So let's start. Got a test coming up? Well, you just had a test.
We have one next Friday, too. Right.
You have one next Friday. Did you have one today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're going to have a test at some point in the near future. And as a memory booster, one traditional memory booster calls for dipping garlic cloves in chocolate and eating 1 to 3 of them a day. So I went to my kitchen, the Short Code Podcast Test Kitchen, and made some delights for all of us. So I'd like you to take one and and pass it on. We'll give it a try.
I'm kind of concerned.
Yeah. I don't think you should be. It's just garlic, chocolate. Garlic, ooh. Chocolate.
Definitely garlic.
It's potent.
It's pretty, this is a whole clove.
Oh, this is like a whole
Did you
the clove?
Roast the clove at all?
Nope.
Or you just
raw delicious garlic. Okay. Garlic. Corey,
do you have breath mints?
You can enjoy that, too.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I got one right
this
here.
This might make me pee.
I'm not sure that I can do it. I've eaten weirder things.
Garlic and chocolate, of course, loaded with antioxidants that supposedly protect brain cells. A 2008 study actually found that feeding rats with garlic affects serotonin levels, which is known to enhance cognitive performance. And a small study in Nature Neuroscience found that people 50 to 69 who consumed... Corey's over there, like, freaking out. Did you eat it already? Okay.
It's gone. Has anyone ever puked on the Short Coat podcast?
No, but I'm hopeful.
Can we have a...
Small study in Nature Neuroscience found that older people who consumed a mixture high in cocoa flavanols for 3 months performed better on a memory test than the control group.
What are we talking about
high? I don't know.
Okay.
Aaron?
Just science.
I just want to know. Because when they say like high, a lot of times indicator. It means like ridiculous amounts that no person would normally have in their diet.
Wow. It's a good point. So let's try this.
Cheers.
And see if we get any Cheers. Memory boost. Oh. Mm.
This reminds me of a memory. That was a phase back
then. Now I'm not going to forget that.
Oh, man.
You know.
It's not terrible.
It's not the worst thing.
My eyes are watering.
It's not the worst thing I've ever had.
It's not good, though.
It's not great.
It's not the weirdest thing.
I'm very okay with the situation. Bad.
Not bad.
Yeah?
I don't think I'd ever pay for it, but...
Yeah. There's a little...
Not the best on an empty stomach.
There's a little burn.
I think if I was in a room studying and you had a tray of these, eventually I would finish them. Like, just by I'm not going to seek them out, but if you put them in front of me... They will be gone eventually.
You know, the best I can say for it is it's not the worst, the weirdest thing I've ever eaten.
What is the... do you have something in mind?
Yes. Yeah, when I was in Chile, the family that I was with, they live in like a decent-sized city, maybe a little bigger than Iowa City. And I came home from a walk, and I heard, meh. And I asked the father, like, what was going on? He was like, oh, we want to take some meat to our daughter who lived in another city. And they proceeded to slaughter a sheep on their front porch.
Right there and there, huh?
In the middle of the city.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we ate all the pieces that they didn't want to take to their daughter.
You know, they say that a lot of people now these days don't know where their food comes from. I gotta be honest with you, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
It was...
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if I had to...
No. I like to look them in the eyes.
You want
to... That's the one.
It's funny, growing up in rural Iowa, you know, my dad's a vet, and, like, we kind of grew up on a farm. It just, like, was part of our, like, upbringing to realize that, like, animals are just food.
Yeah.
And nothing, you know. And so one time my dad rescued these two twin lambs. Their mom, I think, died during childbirth. And then so we, like, bottle fed these lambs. And, like, we had their names and, you know, stuff like that. And then we just came home one day. They were gone. And I'm like, Dad, where are Fitz and Lola? That was their names.
Don't worry about it. Oh, I think naming
no, your... No, no, it wasn't don't worry about it. It's like, oh, we slaughtered them.
And you're like, okay.
Oh, okay.
But we have a delicious dinner to make you feel better.
So no vegans in your family?
No vegans. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I think that went well. Do we feel a memory boost?
I will never
I feel
awake
a little
that.
Bit more alert, actually. Yeah.
A little bit. I'm not surprised. Somebody gives you something mildly gross, you're going to...
Yeah. I'm going to remember that particular incident.
I found I kind of had to focus on the chocolate and try to, like, compartmentalize the garlic taste.
Yeah. Was weird. Like...
So, okay, so let's... the test is over. Maybe the garlic didn't work. And
you should have given
maybe
something to remember
beforehand.
Beforehand.
That would
have, yeah, you're right. Too bad.
Ah, next time.
But let's say you didn't do so great on the test, and you're, you know, feeling uneasy, sad. Mm-hmm. Here's a tip from the Queen's Closet Opened of 1696, which is to, and I need a volunteer before I do this.
I'm down.
Okay. This is good. I'm glad you're down because it relates to last week's episode.
Okay. And talked a lot about poop.
And your power pose.
Okay.
From last week.
What's your power pose?
So we all had to turn around.
This thing?
Yeah. Do your power pose. Yeah. You know, get that confidence. And for whatever reason, my, like, immediate thing when he said do it was hands on stomach. Don't know why.
Well.
I like it.
The from the Queen's Closet Open of 1696, take a turf of green grass and lay it to the navel. And let it lie till you find ease. The green side must be laid next to the belly. Now, of course, it's the middle of winter in Iowa, and I don't have actual grass, but I did find some AstroTurf.
Same thing.
In the corner of the writing lab here.
I think it's better.
Is it?
Why do you have AstroTurf in your writing lab?
It's best perfectly engineered. It's best not to ask questions. It was for a display that we had out in the hallway once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's actually falling apart, I realized, when I tried to... It's been a while since I used it. So you may find bits of AstroTurf in your navel later. So what do you think? This is not a phrase I expected to be saying earlier this week.
Those are the side effects.
The side effects.
Not noticing much.
Do you find yourself wanting more turf?
I think I'm good with this turf. It's just the right amount.
Yeah. I bet it would work better with...
With, like, real grass?
With, like...
Real grass.
Real grass, yeah.
Kentucky blue.
All right, so, but maybe that's not working and you still feel, you know, uneasy. So probably what you're going to do is go out and have a few drinks.
That's like a good remedy for just about anything.
I mean, you know, except for the hangover, right? Nobody likes the hangover. Well, greasy food is, according to many, a great preventative for hangovers. I don't think it does much afterwards, but as a preventative, because, you know, you sort of line your belly, your stomach with grease, and it sort of prevents alcohol absorption. This is what I've read. I don't, yeah. It's, it sounds plausible to me, so let's take it as truth. and eggs are supposedly full of good stuff that cures hangovers. Cysteine, I think, was what I read, was one of the things that helps with this sort of thing. So
that makes sense. Sulfur, eggs, smells like sulfur.
Yeah, I didn't,
there you go.
I didn't really care. Because what I really wanted to do was make these. These are, before I tell you what they are, why don't you take them out?
Are there eggs in them?
All right, we got a little.
There are. You're not an egg person?
Yeah,
all right. Oh. That means we've got an extra.
You're not a fan of eggs, Aaron?
I, no.
How much?
Hard boiled. Some people like
tea. No, I have, like, allergic issues. With
oh, no. We, okay, so I was, I'm glad that I told you what was in it.
Interesting.
Yes, I'm glad that you did too. That would have been an exciting moment.
This is
the first death on the
first death.
It's not that bad.
Short,
it's
like rocked with controversy.
Corey, feel free. Dan, since we've got an extra one.
This smells pretty good.
It does.
It does.
This is a Scotch egg. It is
might need some more powerful silverware.
It is a hard-boiled... Sorry, we don't believe in that in Murph. This is a hard-boiled egg wrapped in sausage.
Oh, yeah.
And deep-fried with breading.
Oh.
I put these together last
this
night.
This is good for us, Hal.
Huh? Because...
Not for your arteries, that's
no.
Sure.
But, you know... You don't. If you went out and got totally toasted last night, you don't care about your arteries right in that moment.
Yeah, sure.
Boy, that looks pretty. Is it?
It's delicious, Dave.
Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah. I'm very happy with the situation.
I'm very happy with this.
Yeah.
Do you have any syrup?
I did not get to. Oh, it would be good with syrup.
Yeah, it would.
I didn't taste it last night. I wanted my first experience of this to be. What do you think, Corey? Yeah. You don't have to say it's good.
Oh, this is good.
I think it would have been better last night, to be honest with you. Like,
I guess, yeah.
You get a pressure.
Yeah. Right.
So you hard-boiled the eggs first.
Yes. Hard-boiled it. I'm trying to imagine how I would cover an uncooked egg.
Okay, that was a stupid question.
Corbin hasn't spent much time in the kitchen or apparently around food.
Nope.
I'm going to take another bite here. Strong recommend.
Yeah,
I would say as a
hangover cure.
It's hangover prevention.
I think it just as a hangover prevention. So you got to have this before you drink.
So you know what that means.
So
we have to put it to the test.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Report back on how that works out. I hope our listeners are enjoying all the chewing.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Sounds.
It's going to be my fourth egg today.
Eggs are great for you, though. You know?
Now, remember when they were bad for you, though?
Yeah, because nutrition isn't real science. Like, they just make stuff up, and then all these crappy recommendations come out, like, oh, you can't have eggs. It's like, eggs are actually really good
should
for
be
you.
Real science, though, because, I mean, every chemical you're putting in your body is active in some way.
I just don't think we know enough.
We don't. It's too complicated. Because you're not putting one thing in, you're putting...
Scholars debate to this day.
Lots.
How many eggs do you think is too many eggs a day?
You said you've had four today.
Yeah.
I knew a fire.
So I could say with confidence of anyone you know, I'd probably eat the most eggs.
You're alive.
I am. Yeah.
I worked with a firefighter that worked six a day.
Because dietary cholesterol really doesn't play a huge role in.
So when I learned that
in eggs,
ramped up my egg eating.
Just dietary cholesterol in general doesn't really play a huge role in your total cholesterol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's more about lifestyle.
Mm.
Just curious, Mark, do you still have the turf on your belly?
I do.
He's going to discover it later tonight.
All right, I'll be
like, oh, crap. I forgot all about that.
The hangover plan did not work, and I'm covered in turf.
All right, I need another volunteer for this last one.
I got you.
Alex Volkmar, you've drank heavily. You didn't eat your Scotch egg. And now you feel lethargic. Here's another one from the Queen's Closet Open from 1696. Corey, would you grab the bucket from behind you, please? It is necessary for lethargy sufferers that people talk loudly in their presence.
Sucks, man. You're not going to like this.
Tie.
I'm glad I didn't volunteer for this one.
The people talk loudly in their presence. Tie their extremities lightly and rub their palms and soles hard and let their feet be put in salt water up to the middle of their shins. Get going. Let's see.
You read it like a witch's brew.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Now, where's my salt packet? Oh, yeah, here it is. This is
one salt packet.
It's homeopathic. Here you go. Put that in there.
I have some Epsom salt I could have brought from home.
Oh.
That ought to do it.
Yeah.
Come on, don't go crazy there. You don't need to be getting all of it in there.
It was like a grain. Let their feet be put in salt water up to the middle of their shins. Mark, if you would.
Oh, at least it's warm.
Yeah, I did that for you.
That was nice of you.
Yeah. Mark, pull his hair and nose What? Just do it, man. Jesus. Pull their hair and nose. Here. Squeeze the toes and fingers lightly. You can just stick with the fingers. All right. I think that would make everybody more comfortable.
Pull my nose.
Stick with the fingers.
Yeah. There's more. Cause pigs to squeal in their ears. Just happen to have a pig here today. Put a feather or straw in his nose to compel him to sneeze. I've got some pepper here. I think that should.
No, no.
That should. That should do it.
Put it in your nose.
And do not ever desist from hindering him from sleeping. You can use the pepper for the last bit. Let human hair or other evil-smelling thing be burnt under his nose. So you can sniff it. I think pepper smells pretty evil myself. I feel.
What am I supposed to feel?
Well, you're not supposed to feel lethargic after all that.
I panicked, yeah.
I'm just kind of hoping. There's no more. It was really. I like the water. I'm like, what's so bad about this?
And then well,
started pulling my hair.
Maybe it should have been cold water. That would be more invigorating, wouldn't it?
So basically, that was annoy them until they're not.
I think
tired
that's it. Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah. Piss them off.
Should have put the pepper on the egg thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought originally when you grab the bucket, you're just gonna be like, purge. This is the only solution.
Gag yourself and tell them.
Should we? So what do we think about all these remedies? I mean, clearly we can not discuss the Scotch egg because that is the remedy for everything, except apparently for egg allergies. Poor Aaron.
I have a standard.
They're not super bad, so it's fine.
I have a standard thought on all homeopathic things. And that's it.
They're awesome.
That is that if it doesn't hurt someone and they feel like it helps, there's no harm in it. You know?
Well,
unless they refuse to do what's actually scientifically indicated.
Hmm. Well, unfortunately, this week I read a study that I don't have a citation for.
We don't need those.
68 homeopathic remedies were tested. And none of them had any effect whatsoever. So
I think a lot of times when you're talking effect with homeopathic remedies, it's more like placebo effect.
Yeah.
Which, not to say that doesn't have a real effect. It's just, I think we get down to it, not measurable.
Yeah. But the results of the study were no better than
right.
Basically accounting for the placebo effect. So.
But my thoughts still stands.
Yeah, I agree with Corbin on that one.
Pick your battles.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, do your homeopathy, but also go to to the doctor.
Because there's the cure and then there's the feeling better, and they're not always the same thing. If the homeopathic is making you feel better while you're getting your cure, then do it.
Have you seen that YouTube video, Homeopathic A&E?
No.
So A&E being the British emergency room. So it's a British, from a British television show. I'm not going to describe it because that would be lame, but go and look it up on YouTube. It's pretty funny. So let's assume for a moment that none of that worked for you. Fortunately, Obama and a bunch of health science leaders last year announced the Precision Medicine Initiative, and last week announced the next step in the effort. The NIH is creating a 1 million person health info database, which they'll have up and running by 2019, they say. It's a common database of diverse people. In other words, and this I thought was interesting, people who aren't, so I'm on these lists, these email lists here of research things because, you know.
It's not the only list you're on, Dave.
thank you. I'm on these lists here of where, you know, they're looking for research subjects. And invariably it's like, you know, if you're, you know, we're looking for you, we're going to pay you money to come and do our research. You have to be, you know, 18 to 24 in good health, you know, or whatever. I never fit the qualifications. But this database, they don't care. They want everybody. They want a million people in it, lots of diversity, because they want to start seeing patterns, health patterns. Volunteers will give blood samples for DNA testing. They'll be provided with health trackers.
Oh yeah.
To see exercise and sleep and all that kind of stuff. They'll also get the info back, which I thought was interesting. So they get to keep all their info, Obama will ask for $309 million from Congress. And given how things are going in Washington, that shouldn't be a problem.
Congress loves him.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Do you ever do those studies here at the university?
I tried to do a study on in the driving simulator.
I did one of those.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
This was like the mini drive. This wasn't the awesome drive. So we have, here at Iowa, we have two driving simulators, I guess. One is like in a janky, you know, lab somewhere downtown. And the other one is out, way out in Coralville.
Yeah, I got that one.
It's a big one.
It's awesome.
It's a big one. I've not been to that one. Anyway, I got to this test, or this study, and I'm a little colorblind, and that disqualified me. Oh, and I'm like, first of all, should have put that on your intake form. That would have been nice.
That's on you, U of I.
That would have been nice.
Wasted my time.
Yeah. Not only that, but the poor, you know, the poor, I don't know what he was, research assistant, had to call his PI to find out if, you know, that would be a problem. So clearly the PI probably never thought about it either. Like, oh, crap, 10% of the population is colorblind.
We should account for that.
We should. We should. Anyway, so no, I've never, my kids have done it. I've done research. So, because how else am I going to get my plasma?
To help pay for applications. I used to donate bone marrow.
Oh. Yeah.
Ooh, that was not the most pleasant.
I did plasma. How much?
I didn't realize they paid for bone marrow.
Yeah, I didn't know. How much do you get for bone marrow?
$1,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Snap.
But it's, shoot. I mean, they're digging in there. They
That's not, pleasant, pleasant.
Are you asleep?
No, you're wide awake the whole time.
Why?
30-minute process. It's not that long, but what the physician told me when she was pulling it out is that's the closest experience men can have to, like, premenstrual cramps. Because you can feel your pelvis kind of, like, contracting as they pull out.
Where are they taking from your hip?
Well, then I don't feel that bad.
Yeah. Like your iliac crest, they go from the back.
Mm-hmm.
Straight in right there.
Mm. Ouch.
That sounds great.
Are there any lasting side effects?
Nope, not that I know of. Not that they know of either. So, I guess
we'll
I can't
ask
answer that
again
one.
In like
it grows back.
Because I know that they do that, you know, bone marrow registry. But that's for donating your bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always think that's got to be a hard sell. Like, that's not, you know, like, it's not a small thing to, you know, it's not like giving your blood. It's, you know, it's painful.
But they match you beforehand.
Right.
Yeah, so you know exactly who it's going to and what.
There's a few lucrative donation things. Plasma, I think, is pretty...
Plasma.
Why is plasma so lucrative? Or, I mean, I guess it's not the best paying one.
There's actually a book. It's an anthropology book, so, you know, you might not want to read it, but...
so strong recommend from
It's called Corbin. Professional Guinea Pigs, and it's about these people who, their entire career is being a part of, like, trials. So usually they're randomized controlled trials. You know, the riskier the more they pay, sort of, you know, so... It's kind of interesting that it enters a lot of ethical discussion about, like, who has to participate, you know, the risk that you put
yourself in. Someone's willing to do it, then.
Well, I mean, the ethical discussion is that people who don't have money are forced to consider things that put themselves at risk.
Like having bone marrow extracted and all that kind of stuff.
Which isn't just, you know, to force... Because someone is in an economically tight situation, that they should be forced to put themselves at risk like that.
But. The poor have always been a major source of experimental subjects, I think, in a lot of
vulnerable populations. I mean,
vulnerable populations, prisoners,
students,
poor people, students.
When you're talking like, it was a big issue at the university that I attended for undergrad. Part of the general psych course was that you had to be part of 3 studies, and you couldn't waive it. And there was an ethical discussion going on as if you are tapping a vulnerable population. Because, like, I had to do one. I was concussed because I played rugby. And they...
Wait, I'm sorry. I missed that. You were concussed as part of the study?
I was concussed before the study. I had been in a rugby match and got a concussion.
and it's like I terrible at the study.
Yeah. The baseball doctor.
All right, before you were concussed.
Before the study that I previously signed up for as part of my class.
Mm.
And I went in and I was like, I've had this concussion. I really don't know what's going on. They did like all these things like flashing lights. It was awful. And so, like, after that experience, I was like, maybe you shouldn't be forcing students to do things like this. And then...
My kids have been involved. I just want to say, before anybody writes me letters, which I welcome, my children were not involved in They were involved in more like, you know, audiology experiments where they had to listen to sounds and watch
things.
That's
what I used to do at Creighton. Yeah. It's easy.
The more fun ones.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to extract their bone marrow. Just actually, that would one shot and I'd get a plasma, pretty much. Yeah. Right?
I mean,
I'm going to think about that.
So with the plasma donation, I'd done it here a couple times and I read a study. I don't know. It's only one that I found. But apparently it permanently changes your like blood composition. If you do it consistently for 2 years, you'll find consistently is once a week.
Oh.
Yeah. It permanently changes it, and there's a statistically significant increase in those individuals having depressive symptoms and seeking treatment.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, now there's no like talk on correlation or anything.
Right.
These are facts that we've noticed based off this population.
Interesting.
So it was enough for me to think, maybe I'll just do it once a month at most.
It's good that you're moderating.
It could be, though, yourself. That the people who have to sell their plasma to make the decent amount of money.
So there's a lot going on with that study.
Yeah.
But it was something that made me think about one day of lost productivity is going to wipe out any potential gains there.
Yeah. So. Well, I guess if you donate too much plasma, you might be interested in this next story I read. But I want to lead into it by saying I'm really loathing Facebook lately, like in a way that I have never loathed it before. Usually I love Facebook, but lately I just want to poke my eyes out when I look at it. And this is not normal for me. And I think it's related to, anybody want to guess?
The presidential election.
You got it. Presidential race.
That's what makes me want to poke my eyes out.
From a perfectly enlightening debate last night.
Oh, man. Did you watch the debate? I did not watch the debate.
I watched clips of the debate.
Yeah. I heard, I did not watch it, but I heard it sounded like this. So when Lisa Weir sent me an article from New York Magazine about apps for mental health, I couldn't help but think, that's a terrible idea. But maybe I could also use such a thing. There's quite a few out there. Seven Cups of Tea is the name of one. It sort of resembles a social network. Volunteer listeners with whom you can anonymously chat. Others sort of connect you with therapists or coaches. It's basically an alternative to in-person counseling. And the reason this sort of piqued my interest in the first place, because I did see a presentation recently about something called QPR, Question, Propose, Refer, for suicide prevention, that recommends, among other things, that we actually ask people if they're feeling like killing themselves, which is not an easy question to ask. But one thing I saw during that presentation was that many young people prefer an app to chat with someone about what's going on than in-person visits, and that it can actually work to diffuse some of that helplessness when people are thinking about suicide, which is kind of a surprise to me. But they're proposing this as a... I'm doing a lot of talking here, guys. A lot of talking. They're proposing this as a sort of an end run around problems like, you know, access. So treatment compliance, of course, depends on quite a few things, like whether or not you can comply, like go to the doctor's office or go to your therapist, whether you need to take time off from work, insurance limits, avoiding stigma and all that kind of stuff. So what do you think of this? Would you go to an app for your...
A couple weeks ago, I remember mentioning on here that I would see those pop up on my Facebook, the advertisements.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I think it was Rob that said, he's like, you're using too many emojis. You gotta balance out your emoji usage.
Too many frowny.
I think it's a good idea. Here at UI, we have the telemedicine things that are getting pretty big. So I feel like this is an extension of that.
I'm not so certain. I think a lot of the problem with the way our mental health system works, and this is the same with healthcare in general, is it puts the onus of accessing care on the patient. And with a lot of mental health diseases, depression, for example, your ability to first realize that you need help and then get the motivation, because a lot of these affect your motivation, to seek help are affected. So I think it would help solve a problem of access if people know that they're affected in the first place. So if they have some clue of what's going on, it might help, but a lot of the issue is not that to start with.
So
you're saying the issue is not access, it's awareness?
It's not only access, is what I'm trying to say. Access is a huge issue, but the seeking out of care, and it partially due to stigmatization, partially due to just the nature of the diseases, is difficult.
When you're, the idea is like when you're depressed,
it's hard to feel motivated to take care of yourself in any way. Mm-hmm. So the idea of like getting yourself to a doctor or doing anything, you know, that can be sometimes too much of a barrier to get out of bed, go to my appointment, you know, get dressed, shower, et cetera, et cetera. And then I guess, Aaron, are you trying, like with the app,
are you saying this does not solve that problem?
You still have to kind of find that motivation, and that is exactly what this is affecting. The app might help that.
It can help via push notifications.
That might be it, but you still have to go be like, yes, I probably need this. Yes, I need to find it. Yes, I need to talk to somebody. And so I don't know if that's stigmatization thing that you need to address.
And hopefully, who would think
to go to their phone and go, okay, I need to download this app because I'm feeling depressed. I mean,
that would have to be like a public health campaign.
So yeah. Right.
Let's tell high schoolers about this app that there is, you know, and that goes along with, and, you know, people support networks, which is probably how most people who are depressed end up getting treatment if they don't feel like they can pursue it themselves, is they have someone in their support network who's like, you need help. And they send them there, which is why people who are socially isolated have more problems with this type of thing. But, you know, I think the move to something like this app makes sense mm-hmm. on a cultural level, because I really do think that there's a big change in the way, like, we as human beings perceive communication and outreach than what has been true in the past. Like, connectedness to our generation is a lot different than connectedness to, like, my grandparents' generation or my parents' generation. Mm. You know, to feel connected might mean me getting online,
right,
and talking to my friends, you know, as opposed mm-hmm. to like my parents who needed to go, or my grandparents who need to go to like 6 a.m. coffee at the bakery to feel connected.
And then write a letter.
And then write a letter. Right, exactly. And that's also some of the research shows why dating sites have gotten more, you know, more popular, is because we, as a generation, perceive connection in that way. Like, we are comfortable finding people online because we can connect to people online.
Man, what's the future going to be like? You know,
we're all going to be mostly robot. That's my plan.
Brain in a jar. I love your brain waves.
It's going to be all VR pretty much, I think.
Yeah. Well, half of counties in America apparently don't have any mental health professionals. So, you know, if you want something close to home, you might not be able to get it.
Right.
And so maybe this is a good... Well, fortunately, there's a company called Nirvana that wants to sell us mood-enhancing headphones that work by stimulating not only our cochleas, but our vagus nerves.
Dopamine high is what they're calling it.
You're going to make us pass out or puke?
Yeah, you've read about this.
I saw it. They said that...
well, that's... So
the first product recall. You've been vomiting uncontrollably. Please.
Stop using our product.
Calling up customer service. What's happening?
I've been listening to the Short Code podcast on my headphones and it's making me puke. That's not the headphones. apparently it works by generating small electrical signals that are synchronized with the music that you're listening to, and they go through the ear canal and stimulate the vagus nerve to release dopamine.
Yeah, so the whole idea is like dopamine release, which is like how addictive pathways are formed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
I saw this and I was like, oh, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Someone's going to be walking into clinic. I got to get my headphones, man.
I got that song.
This is a whole new, you could go back to your app to talk about how you're addicted to your headphones. It's dopamine, it's a gambling, junk food, though. Sex, signals that make you feel good. So... I can't imagine anything would go wrong with that.
It's a great product move, though. It's like exactly what cigarette companies do. Get someone addicted to that, and then they're never going to leave.
It's going to be people selling headphones on the street corner.
Right.
I got your headphones. Got your headphones here. Nirvana says there is no risk of overstimulation, but of course, no FDA approval is needed to prove that. And they also haven't offered up any evidence to support the claims that they even do anything. Although they say that the people behind the device are medical professionals.
So, what does that mean exactly?
Don't know. They did not.
They did not say physicians.
They did not say.
They did not, yeah.
Yeah.
Friends don't let friends wear headphones.
They're only $299, though. So if you think about it in terms of, you know, the usual things people get addicted to.
Yeah.
They're much less expensive.
That's not bad.
Yeah. That's like That's like a dime bag right there. That's like nothing. I don't even know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
The course of concern with like stuff like this would be like a refractory period, right? Where like if you don't have the headphones on, you're going to start feeling worse than what you would have, you know, otherwise.
Going to headphone remission?
Yeah.
My immediate thought was more spending. So how am I going to get like break the limiter on these headphones and ramp it up?
Yeah.
That's going to be my first.
You're going to be plugging it right into your electrical outlet directly in there.
Looking into a car battery.
Short circuit the pleasure center of your brain.
Right.
I just like that they use the word stimulate the cochlea.
You'd be like, the tuft of grass on my navel wore off.
It's still there.
I need to.
Going strong.
It's not working anymore. I need to plug my headphones into an electrical socket.
I think the tuft of grass is working. I'm glad I kept it here.
Good.
I might keep this, Dave.
Good. You're usually, I have to say that you're usually not very cheerful. And now you see, seem very cheerful. This is working. Did you know that Cuba has a lung cancer vaccine? Do you know this? Cimavax both treats and vaccinates against lung cancer, and it has been researched in Cuba and Europe, Cuba especially, for 25 years now. And with the sort of recent reopening of trade, or opening of trade between the U.S. and Cuba, New York Governor Mario Cuomo led a trade mission to Cuba last year, and that resulted in an agreement to bring the vaccine to the U.S. for clinical trials.
Okay. Mark, are you looking at it?
Yeah.
Do we have more information? Because, like, is there a virus, like HPV, that causes lung cancer, or what's
going on? So it's non-small cell lung carcinoma is what it's specifically for, and it says here, let's look at it, I'm trying to find the...
It works by basically stimulating the immune system to make antibodies to the tumor.
So why is it lung tumor specific?
It's a good question.
Yeah, that's mostly what I'm wondering.
Cuba really needed a vaccine, apparently, what with all the Cuban cigars. and they have a lot of cancer, apparently. Study in the Journal of Clinical Oncology did confirm the safety of Cimavax in 2007, and was effective for increased survival if the person was under 60. It's also pretty cheap. It's about $1 a shot.
That is cheap. It wouldn't be $1 a shot here.
No, yeah.
We're talking $1 a shot in Cuba.
Yeah, that is in Cuba. No significant side effects. Obviously, we're going to be doing some clinical trials on that. It'll take years before we, in the U.S., could possibly benefit from it.
Don't let Farmer Bro get a hold of it.
Yes. He's the thing of the past now. He's going to jail.
Is he?
Well, you know, that's my prediction.
Probably.
That's my prediction.
Did you see there was another guy, this was a tech guy, that wrote a letter in California basically to the effect of, I've done my work, I've gone to college, and I'm successful. I shouldn't have to see all these homeless people on the streets.
The word he used later on to riffraff.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I don't want to look at these riffraff.
Yeah.
Oh, so, God, that's, what was he like?
He's
visiting from 1920? Tippecanoe and Tyler too.
So this weekend I just listened to Hamilton.
Oh.
For the first time. That was my immunology study track.
I hear that's a good...
US Rush, it's amazing.
This is a play about Alexander.
Yeah, it's a musical
play
about Alexander Hamilton. Written by his parents are Puerto Rican, and then he casted all minorities as like the founding fathers.
Is it the same guy who did In the Heights?
Yep, Lin-Manuel Miranda is the guy. But it's really interesting. It's very historically accurate, but when you take it from the point of having all these founding fathers as minorities, it gives it another spin and makes it not only historically accurate, but very relevant to a lot of conversations that are going on now. And the music is really, really good.
Cool.
So did you see that Puerto Rico is fining stores for price gouging condoms because of
the Zika? And they froze the price.
Yeah, they froze the price of condoms, which is a responsible government thing to do.
Yeah.
That's how you stop the spread of terror.
We don't do that here in the U.S. We prefer to let the market handle that.
The market will let people get STDs.
Or anything else.
Did you find out anything helpful about Cimavax?
So what it does is epidermal growth factor. It denies the tumor growth factor. So that's its main mechanism of action. So it says it lowers body concentration in order to do that.
But still, why?
Yeah, why just lungs? Because that seems
it seems like
against multiple cancers.
So later on,
or your own cells.
It's more of a preventive vaccine more than a cancer therapy per se.
Yeah, I mean, it can shrink tumors, but
I'm going to look into this.
Yeah,
get on it, Aaron.
I will.
Says it's high. So I don't see why it wouldn't be a broad, because they even mention it here, like in their thing of it. It's hijacked by many types of cancer, including cancer of the lung, colon, kidney, head and neck, EGFR. I don't know if that's like the highest concentration or the way they prepared it.
Okay.
They don't give much info.
Maybe there's a lung specific version of EGFR. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Not me.
They're looking at 20 more cancer treatment and prevention technologies in Cuba, including other lung cancer vaccine. Cuba has a pretty good health system.
Yeah, they have a really impressive health system.
And they have a similar life expectancy to the U.S., about 79, 80 years. One of the best doctor-to-patient ratios in the world. Mm-hmm. And they actually invest in preventative health measures like public education, housing,
that's
nutrition.
A revelation.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So look into CemaVax, people. I can't do all the work. Good grief.
Your homework for the week.
And just like that, the show's over. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today, listeners. If you like what you hear, do me a favor. Do us a favor. Do all of us a favor. Go to iTunes, whether you use iTunes to listen to us or not, and give us a review. So what I've learned is that this is actually more important for the growth of this show than you might think, because a review on iTunes affects the recommendation algorithms that most of the podcast listening sites use. So go to iTunes, give us a 5-star. If you don't like what you heard today, don't do that. Don't do anything. Do nothing. As always, I'm available to hear what you think as well. Send us an email at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter. Call us at 347-SHORT-CT. Whatever you want to do. The show is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Box. Our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week.